It's time for another episode of Corner of the Galaxy from the Box, the show that gets you behind the scenes of the LA Galaxy and into the minds of soccer reporters and MLS experts. Your hosts for the day are Corner of the Galaxy's Josh Gessman and LA Times soccer reporter Kevin Baxter. Let's start the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on cornerofthegalaxy.com. I'm your host, Josh Gessman. With me, Mr. Kevin Baxter. We have a great show for you tonight. The LA Galaxy lose 2-1 to Sporting Kansas City. Nothing new there. The second game of their three-game road trip. We'll head off to Houston, and I'll have a little preview of that a little bit later. But before we get to anything, let's check in with Mr. Kevin Baxter, who is off covering the Dodgers right now. So he's at the stadium, so he's joining us by phone instead of over Skype like it normally is. Kevin, how are you doing?
All right. You know, it's funny. This team, as you know, the Dodgers are very good this year. It's kind of like a whole different atmosphere being around this team and at the stadium. There's a lot of excitement where, I mean, I think it's fair to say without piling on with the Galaxy that sometimes it feels a little sad and depressed when you go out there.
I will say that sad and depressing is probably, even in the press box, I think sometimes it's sad and depressing that we have to go and watch what is possibly another LA Galaxy loss. But the LA Galaxy 2-1 losers to Sporting Kansas City. I guess the most exciting thing about this game, Kevin, was that on my flight back from Denver, as I was visiting my son this weekend, I got to sit next to one of Dave Romney's biggest fans. So one, to be going from Denver to Orange County, and two, to find somebody who actually knows who the Galaxy is, which some people know, but three, to find somebody who's Dave Romney's biggest fan. I think that was the real highlight I'm taking away from this.
Well, you know, I'm not his biggest fan, I don't think, but I'm a Dave Romney fan too. I was not on that flight, but you know, if I had been, we could have had a little party.
I was going to say, I got so many tweets from people who were basically saying, well, that's impossible because I wasn't on that plane. So a lot of that. But let's get to Sporting Kansas City, a 2-1 loss. The LA Galaxy, you know, despite the score there, Kevin, it's 2-1. The Galaxy only lose by one goal. I don't know how close it ever was. The one goal scored by Roman Alessandrini on a free kick. The Galaxy allow two first half pretty ugly goals. Sporting Kansas City seemed like they were in pretty good control of the entire match. What'd you take away from this game?
Well, you know, once again, the Galaxy fall behind early. That seems to be a pattern. They fall all season. And anyone following the math, just in case, you know, we keep saying the Galaxy have not been mathematically eliminated, and that remains true even after the Sporting Kansas City game. However, it's about as close as you can get. If the Galaxy do not get full 3 points from each of their next four games, and San Jose, Houston, all they have to lose all of their games, and the Galaxy also has to make up a minus 22 goal differential. If the Galaxy can do all those things, they will make the playoffs. If they do get anything other than a win in Houston, then it's all over. So on the verge of mathematical elimination, as I guess opposed to the spiritual elimination, which I think happened about a month ago.
I was going to say, even Landon Donovan on the broadcast was trying to say that the Galaxy, if they want to make the playoffs, and I'm all, Landon, just let it go, man. I know it's not
like John Kempin.
Yeah, John Kempin. We're going to talk about him here in just a little bit as well. But I guess the big news coming out of this, or at least in this game, the thing that sort of threw up red flags immediately for the LA Galaxy and LA Galaxy fans is Giassi Zardes to right back. Kevin, this is something that you and I had heard rumors about going back maybe 2 or 3 weeks. It seemed like it was maybe something that was never going to happen. So it was one of the reasons that we sort of just sat on it for a little while. But Giassi Zardes did start it right back here, Kevin. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, Giassi had played right back in training a couple weeks ago. I believe one or two training sessions they tried him at right back. He didn't like it. Told Ziggy he didn't like it. I don't know what Ziggy thought of it. Ziggy actually said he thought Giassi played pretty well at right back. Giassi apparently didn't know he was playing right back until the morning of the game. So why it wasn't discussed with him, I don't know. But I'm kind of two minds of this. It could be a good change. It could be something that helps his career going forward. I mean, we saw Robbie Rogers go from midfield to right back, saved his career. Ziggy had some luck doing that with some other players earlier in his career. The way I read it right now, though, is Ziggy has made a point that the season is over, that he's looking forward to next year, that guys are playing for their jobs. I think this is to get Giassi's attention. A little bit, maybe not of a punishment, but just to say, look, if you're not going to score, you can't play striker. So we're going to try it right back and let Giassi think about this a little bit. I don't know where he'll play in Houston or going forward in the three games after Houston, whether he'll stay at right back. But I think the intention was to get Giassi's attention and say, forward's got to score, and if you're not going to score, we'll find another place to play you.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly seems that way. And the whole discussion going back to Siggy Schmidt and, you know, what did and didn't happen, you know, it sounds like Giassi wasn't comfortable playing it right back and told Siggy that, and then eventually wasn't put in that spot after training there for a couple times. So, I mean, there's been a lot of sort of talk about him going back there, but it seems like he was never up for that particular role. And so to see him there, listen, in my mind, this all reeks of desperation for the LA Galaxy. You know, maybe for Giassi's artist, maybe this is a weird way to save his career. I think you mentioned that, Kevin. I mean, maybe this is, he's certainly not scoring goals. He doesn't look like he has the touch, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure he has the touch at right back either. It seems like it's a far stretch. I know this for sure, Kevin. I was talking to somebody over the weekend, and you know, basically it seems like at least some part of the LA Galaxy front office or management team or coaching team or somebody within the organization was very high on trying to trade Giassi's artist in the summertime, or at least earlier this year. So, I mean, I think that there is some discontent with Giassi's artist and the way he's been playing and what he has looked at. And so whenever you factor that into going back to right back, this may be a last chance stop for Giassi's artist. And whether that's fair or not, whether you can blame him for, you know, the results that have certainly come, and, you know, Giovanni Dos Santos isn't scoring goals and no other LA Galaxy striker is scoring goals right now. But whether or not any of that happens, you know, this may be a place where he can find success. And for the LA Galaxy, it's a place where they have just made mistake after mistake, in my opinion.
Ziggy said a lot of things after the game. He said that, first of all, I said he thought Giassi did well, but he said, look, I didn't want to put Giassi there. I really didn't have a choice. I had a lot of injuries. Giassi helped me out by deciding to play there, or, you know, agreeing to play there, I guess would be a better way to put it. He also said Giassi plays well wide, which is true. He's played very well as a wide player with the national team. But if that's your reasoning, then why not play him wide as a midfielder? Why move, you know, why keep playing him as a target striker? Why not play him wide as a midfielder if you are going to admit that he plays best wide? And the other thing I think that entered into this is I think the front office looked at this and said, Giassi's artist is making a ton of money. We're not going to just put this guy on the bench. He's not being productive. Find a place where we can put him on the field and let him run around and, you know, take a roster, take a lineup spot and at least get something out of the money that we're paying this guy. And again, I don't know that this is a permanent thing. It still, like I said, feels to me like a little bit of a punishment, get his attention. Maybe it's a message, too. Maybe part of the message, I don't know what they're saying behind closed doors, but maybe part of the message is, Giassi, you know what, you may not have a future here, so you might want to think about what you want to do in the offseason.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Interesting to see what Bruce Arena takes from that as well in terms of any U.S. men's national team aspirations for Giassi's artist ever again. I know that's a stretch to talk about, but it is something that was in his repertoire prior to his injury. Now it's not even, you know, really an option for Bruce Arena in my mind. But hey, you know, maybe again, to me, this is less about Giassi's artist, Kevin, and more about the LA Galaxy's inability to find a right back throughout this entire season. I mean, they've been scrambling the entire season since Robbie Rogers got hurt to find a right back, and they have not been able to hold down that position for any length of time. Even Pelé Von Aanholt, as good as he was, obviously getting injured and out now, they still don't have a right back. And with Diallo still out with the hamstring, Giassi's artist is one of the only options. You could put Rafa Garcia back there. But yeah, again, putting Giassi's artist to the bench seems like it would be one of those obvious things to happen here very shortly. The same with Giovanni Dos Santos, quite honestly. And neither of those things are happening, and I don't think they're going to happen throughout the rest of the season. So this seems like sort of a desperate move, but one that maybe gets some attention from Giassi's artist. That's just it, to me, I think it's desperate. I don't know that it was a great idea. I don't know that it's long-lasting, but for one game, it happened, and you saw that Sporting Kansas City continually targeted that side at Giassi's artist and had some success over on that side as well. So it was very interesting to see how that all went down. The other sort of criticism I have of it, Kevin, is that you put him on the same side as Roman Alessandrini, knowing that whatever midfielder was going to be there would have to help out. That really limited Alessandrini, especially in the first half, from getting forward and really being dangerous where you need him to be. Your most potent offensive player was rooted to the right back position because Giassi's artist needed help and cover on defense.
Well, you know, another couple things when you think about the right back position is Van Aanholt did play pretty well when he was there. He's not there anymore because of knee injury. You can't play. I think Nathan Smith has kind of played himself out of that position. Diallo was hurt, and with Steris out for the rest of the season, Dave Rodney was unavailable to play right back. So, you know, I do believe, Ziggy, there was an injury situation where he had to move those guys around. But, again, it doesn't look like a long-term solution. You know, another guy we haven't talked much about that I believe Landon Donovan was very critical of in the broadcast is João Pedro. And so you look at some of the off-season acquisitions that this team has made and the way that the team really doesn't fit together, and I think João Pedro is kind of part of that too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Landon was basically saying that, you know, he seems like he could be a good player, but he's not. And if you're going to spend, you know, over $1 million in a transfer fee for a guy, then you have to hit on these players. You can't be wasting money on players that aren't performing. And up to a certain point, I think he's right with that. Granted, João Pedro makes $150,000, Kevin, in overall salary, but it's that transfer fee that makes him an expensive proposition in Major League Soccer and a guy who's going to take up targeted allocation money. And because of that, you're not getting really what you need to out of a player that you spent over $1 million for. Which is sort of a warning about some of the other acquisitions. I mean, outside of, let's say, Alisson Drini, all the other acquisitions that the LA Galaxy have gone after have really fallen flat so far, and that includes Jonathan Dos Santos, who I think was completely unnecessary. It was an unnecessary signing. And so when you look at that and how they're spending, listen, Landon was very critical of the LA Galaxy, and I didn't find an error in anything that he said about the LA Galaxy and what they look like in 2017.
Well, one of the things you said is it doesn't sound like there's any kind of a plan, and when you put your striker at right back, that kind of speaks to that. That didn't seem like it was planned. And one of the things you said about João Pedro that I thought was very interesting and very true is you said, you know, he's at the end of his first season. He's a young guy. He's a bright guy. He's obviously, you know, has some talent, but he hasn't adjusted. He hasn't become accustomed to MLS play. He hasn't sort of fit in yet. And I think that's true. If anything, it feels to me like he's regressed. I thought he was pretty decent in the middle of the season, but he's really been a non-factor in the last few games that he's played, and now he's out with the hamstring injury. It's the seventh starter now that is out with an injury. So the injury bug continues to bite. But, you know, he hasn't really grown into the team. And we talk a lot about what the front office did or didn't do, and the fact clearly that this team doesn't fit at all. The pieces do not fit together. But, you know, as you just said, too, that off-season acquisition, João Pedro, that in-season acquisition, Jonathan Dos Santos, really hasn't been the player everybody expected him to be. He puts up a yellow card in the first minute of the Sporting Kansas City game. I mean, that just shows a real lack of discipline and perhaps a lack of game plan from the coaching staff.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say blame Giassi Zardes on that. That was a horrible pass on Giassi Zardes' fault. He's lucky that Jonathan Dos Santos is even able to get anywhere near it. So as I'd love to just throw Jonathan Dos Santos under it, it was Giassi Zardes and his horrible first touch and his bad passing that has plagued his career. And see, whenever you're an offensive player like he has been, Kevin, and you give up the ball like that, sometimes it doesn't hurt you as bad as if you're a defensive player and you give up the ball like that. And Jonathan Dos Santos forced, I think in 30 seconds in the match, had to pick up a yellow card. And I was worried it might be a red card whenever I first looked at it, because it was not a good challenge. It was not nasty, and maybe he could have done a little bit better, but Giassi Zardes owns that yellow card for Jonathan Dos Santos, in my opinion. I thought another guy who we haven't talked about, who made a surprise start here, Kevin, which just boggles the mind, quite honestly, but Clément Diop got his first start since July 4th, that 6-2 loss to RSL in this game. So Clément Diop back in goal. This just raises all sorts of red flags for me, Kevin. You have John Kempen, who is going to play against his former team, a guy who's gotten most of the starting minutes, a guy who you are trusting and has played. And if you're Siggy Schmidt, why in the world, in front of his friends and family, I'm sure, would you decide to not start John Kempen in this game over Clément Diop? That boggles the mind for me.
Well, there's a lot of messages being sent. And again, I'm going to go back to the original thought. I think that was a message being sent to Jesse's artist. Perhaps this one was being sent to John Kempen, too. I mean, Ziggy did sort of anoint him as the starter recently, and now all of a sudden he took the starting thing away from him. Is he saying, I just want to get one more look at Clément Diop before the offseason, so when I go into the offseason, I can make some decisions? Or is he saying to John Kempen, look, you had a good spell there, and it fell apart, and it went south. You gave up 4 goals in consecutive games. We're going to try another guy and see if we can get your attention. I think there's an awful lot of subtle, not-so-subtle message sending right now. Does Ziggy for all of John Kempen's talk about we still got a shot at the playoffs and we just have to get hot at the right time, for all that talk, Ziggy has clearly started setting things up for next year. And he's auditioning players. He's auditioning Giassi at right back. You know, maybe he catches something, a surprise there, like Robbie Rogers. He's going to Brian Rowe probably get a start down the stretch, don't you think? Maybe just one more look before we let him go in the offseason. There's a lot of decisions that Ziggy has to make. Probably the biggest decision is how much this team do we blow up? And I do believe him when he says people are playing for their jobs. There's a lot of guys that are playing a lot of minutes this year that are not going to be back next year. And that's that Ziggy's trying to determine right now which ones those are.
No, I agree with you, Kevin. I think that is, you know, something that Siggy's looking at. And if you look at anything, listen, we were told before Siggy even came on that the LA Galaxy were going to look to upgrade that goalkeeping position. And Landon Donovan obviously mimicked that. And I don't think anybody's happy with, you know, the results that they've been getting in goals. So I think that is a position, regardless of who's here. Maybe he's looking to find out who's going to be the backup for the LA Galaxy right now, because that seems like the only position that is open for the LA Galaxy is the backup position and not next year's starting position. I expect the Galaxy to go out and do something and get somebody there. But another acquisition that they had here, Kevin, Michael Ciani. Siggy was a little critical of the first goal that Ciani allowed, getting beat to the front post by Sporting Kansas City attacker there. It was again another sort of, we're trying to put together the pieces on this guy, Kevin, because we haven't seen him. We don't know if he's fit yet. I imagine he's getting closer and closer with each game, but he's being forced into here. Michael Ciani, so far, his performance has been well below what the LA Galaxy are going to need from him. And if indeed they did sign him to an 18-month contract, we haven't been able to get anybody to confirm that or deny it, quite honestly, yet. But if they signed him to an 18-month contract, this is a guy that they spent money on that will be here for the 2018 season. And is that ever going to fly back there at center back?
Well, you know, again, looking at the Galaxy's offseason and in-season acquisitions, he was in season acquisition. You look at a year ago, at the beginning of the 2016 season, and it was like they could do no wrong. It was under Bruce Arena, and it got Ashley Cole and Yella Von Dahl. Nobody knew anything about Yella Von Dahl turning to be the player of the season. They got Nigel DeJong. Ashley Cole still playing well. It just seemed like they had the mightiest touch a year ago, and this year it's more of a everything they touch turns to bronze. It just seems like nothing really, with the difference about spinning, nothing's really worked out for them this year.
Yeah, and another thing that obviously hasn't worked out, Kevin, you have to look at Giovanni Dos Santos. Only got one shot the entire 90 minutes he played, and Siggy Schmidt made a point of putting him up top and making him stay there. If you go back and look at the distribution and sort of his heat map charts and where he was on the field, Kevin, he was not up top in front of goal very often. All right, so this was a guy who was asked to stay up top, and Siggy said, hey, I asked him to stay up there, and he did a good job. I would say that maybe that wasn't the case. But with Giovanni Dos Santos, gets one shot. It was on goal, so I guess that's great. In the 13th minute, and otherwise was completely silent in this game. Not saying the LA Galaxy created a whole bunch of offensive chances. Ima Boateng had a great run through some traffic that created some offense. But again, Giovanni Dos Santos, the highest paid player in the LA Galaxy, one shot total in 90 minutes in a game where he is the featured striker. Is this more evidence that Giovanni Dos Santos not fitting with this club, or is this more evidence of the LA Galaxy's inability to get anything going offensively?
I think there's a little bit of both, and I think it's another thing that goes back to the original point I had, which I'm beating to death, and I apologize for that, and that's Ziggy trying to find out where players fit as he goes up to next year. I think, you know, people have talked about Giovanni wasn't in the right position. He wasn't playing at the right spot. He wasn't matched with the people that make him are going to make him better than paired with them. So I think Ziggy said, okay, fine. We'll put you up top alone. You're the target guy. You're the main man. Let's see what you can do. That way we've answered that question. We can answer the question of, oh, it wasn't your place of formation. It wasn't the people that were paired with you. It wasn't the people around you. It was the fact that you're just not playing well. And, you know, so in my mind, that's this was another step in that direction. Let's see what Jazzy can do right back, and let's see, you know, see if we can get his attention. Let's put Giovanni up front, and let's give him no excuses. And if he comes through, great. Then we've found his position. If he doesn't, then we've answered that. We've eliminated that position as being the problem with his production. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't need to score a hat trick, but he needs to get more than one shot on goal for Ziggy to be able to answer that question. And Ziggy's not going to throw him under the bus now. I think Ziggy is still in the education phase right now. But it is interesting if he is taking that kind of approach with Giovanni, saying, where can we put him in to be productive? And if he isn't productive in any of those positions, what do we do with him? I mean, I still think that question is going to be a big question going into the offseason. What do we do with Giovanni Dos Santos? He hasn't produced like he did the year before. This has been the story of his career. Look at his career, 18 months in each city. He plays good for a year and a half, and then they let him go. Same with the Galaxy. He played very well his first season, played his first half season, if you remember.
Right.
Scored a goal in his first game. Played really well last year, led the team in goals and assists. This year he's disappeared. So that follows his career path. Surely the Galaxy are aware of that. And Chris Klein has said that they can move these guys on loan and make money off them. I don't see how he can move either one of those Santoses without moving both of them, because they're sort of tied together.
Yeah.
So Ziggy is trying to find a place for Gio and try to answer those questions about what he can do to make him productive. And if Gio's going to lay an egg, then you've answered a question, but you've created a problem, because now what do you do?
Yeah, it's the big sort of conundrum I should say. I know it's easy to say, right? Easy for you to say. The new franchise record, 17 losses in a season. I expect that may go up by two or three more as the last four games get played out. So the LA Galaxy had never lost more than 16 games in a season. 1997, won 16 games, lost 16 games. Kevin, in the MLS shootout era, still finished, I think, second in the Western Conference that year. So this is a new era record in terms of losses, 17 losses, and I would expect that they probably finish with 18 or 19 losses, maybe even 20 losses on the year. That's not good, but we also looked at something on cornerofthegalaxy.com with some different charts. 58 goals conceded on the year. In 2008, the LA Galaxy conceded 62 goals. So basically, the LA Galaxy have to not allow more than four goals in order for them not to set the new franchise record in goals conceded. And right now, their goal differential sets on minus 21. Their lowest ever was minus 10, I believe, in 2007. So when you look at all those things and you put those into consideration, the fact that this is the worst LA Galaxy team really isn't even going to be an argument, I think, at the end of the season. I think it's going to be clear and obvious that that everybody involved in this team in 2017 led them to the worst Galaxy season in history for the club, a club that has been around since the beginning of the league, Kevin.
There's a couple more potential firsts. They have 7 wins right now with 4 games to go. The record for fewest wins in a season was that 2008 club, I believe, with 8. So they need to win 2 games to avoid tying that record. And they've never finished last. The Galaxy, an original MLS team, so 22nd season, never finished last. Right now they're a point ahead of Colorado, but Colorado has a game in hand. So the Galaxy are fighting. They're fighting not to make some sort of poor history in on a number of different fronts. You know, they've got to stop losing. They've got to win a couple of games. They've got to stop giving up goals. They've got to close up on that goal differential, and they've got to stay out of the cellar. When you talk about this being the worst season in Galaxy history, certainly there's a lot of numbers and evidence you can point to, and a lot of bad records being set that sort of underline that point. And so where do you go? I mean, Ziggy, I feel sorry for Ziggy. Ziggy's, again, trying to find things out, trying to learn things about players. And none of it's working, and it's got to be so frustrating for him. Somebody asked him after the game, one of the reporters in Kansas City asked him whether it was good for the LA Galaxy, good for MLS that the LA Galaxy would have a down season because they've been so dominant. And Ziggy's response was, well, it's not good for me. And that's kind of where he is. Yeah, I'm trying to think, these guys are positioned, I'm trying to answer questions. We're also trying to win or at least play well. None of this is good for Ziggy. I feel sorry for him. I mean, this is the winningest coach in MLS history. He's won MLS Cups. He's won, a handful of U.S. Open Cups. And now he's got this club coming off the year when he couldn't make Seattle win, and then Seattle goes on to MLS Cup title. This, I can't really speak for last season. Seattle, this season, this club that he got was a bad team. There was not much he could do with it. I think Cardenoso got a little bit more out of the players, but those injuries just kept piling up, and they really hamstrung Ziggy Schmidt. But this has got to don't you think this has got to follow him into his eventual retirement? That, yeah, he's the winningest coach of all time, But look at the end of his career, what happened, and it's really not his fault in L.A.
Yeah, it's not, and hopefully they can start to, you know, rebuild this team for the offseason, and that's sort of where all this takes a turn. But, Kevin, we're gonna let you go, buddy. I know you're going to cover that Dodger game and do that, and I'm going to finish up the rest of the podcast. But thanks for calling in. I know you were busy. I know we squeezed this in, so we'll get back to you next Monday for sure, right?
Sorry about, yes, next Monday I will be in Orlando, but I will be in a hotel room with a microphone. None of this ambient noise and a little bit more concentration on my part, and we'll do a real podcast next week.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot, Kevin. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Kevin Baxter, LA Times there chiming in from Dodger Stadium where he's covering things. Listen, I mean, you know, we always strive to have really good audio coverage, and I think for the most part this year we've done a pretty good job of it. With Kevin and Kevin, you know, covering the Dodgers now and trying to cover that sort of the end of the season there, it's sort of all hands on deck for him. So he'll be bouncing around, but covering the U.S. men's national team and bouncing all around here. But we do plan on continuing the shows through the rest and end of the season, and they include some of the off weeks that are coming at the beginning of October. So stay tuned to that. But we still got a bunch of show here. I want to get to some calls that we got. We've got some calls and some questions. I'm going to do my best to sort of answer those and get us through this the rest of the show, and also give you a brief preview of the Houston Dynamo and what's coming up on Wednesday night for the LA Galaxy as they finally finish off the third of their three-game road trip, 0-2 so far. We'll see how Houston fares and all that. Houston on a bit of a slide, so maybe the LA Galaxy can play spoiler here. I'm not holding my breath. Let's get to some calls. Let's go to Brian. Brian calls in.
Hey, Josh, it's Brian. Sorry, somebody was walking in front. Obviously, nothing happened in that match that we didn't already expect. Galaxy lost, and thus are out of the playoffs. Everyone expected both of those things to happen. So, c'est la vie, right? Now the build towards 2018 happens. I think it was back in the Toronto game. You had Ziggy Smith that kind of pushed back Dominic Kinnear, who got up off his seat and went over towards the line. So it's almost as if Kinnear has in his mind that he is the coach. And I'm wondering, as has been speculated before, if Ziggy is actually going to be the general manager and Kinnear is going to be the head coach, which I hope so. This team needs to build towards 2018. They need to build for the Cup. They need to build for the playoffs. And they need to build for LAFC. It's a lot to handle. And do you think they can do it? I don't think they can. Take it easy.
All right. There goes Brian. Out on a walk, I imagine, there. He tried leaving a message before. That was his second attempt on it. So good job, Brian. You got it through. Yeah, I think there's a possibility of Ziggy going to GM and Dominic Kinnear being the coach. I also think there's a good possibility that that Ziggy stays the head coach and that between him and Dominic Kinnear, they take that GM role and they're able to sort of fill that between the two of them while they're still doing that. To me, you know, so far, at least what I've been able to see in limited sort of observations with them is that these two guys are a team. I don't think that you have to worry right now, at least, about, you know, somebody trying to, you know, one up the other guy. And I think they went into this, and Dominic Kinnear went into this, understanding that he's the assistant coach. But I also think that these guys are both disciplinarians in the fact that they're going to get on guys. And so if you see Dominic Kinnear get up off the bench, I mean, really, we should look at this more like Bruce and Dave were, which was Dave was the associate head coach and Bruce was the head coach and general manager. I think that maybe that role could sort of morph into that. I'll tell you right now that I fully believe, and I've talked to people in the front office, that basically the guys who are running things now in terms of player acquisition and that type of thing, I believe that instead of it being Pete Vianis and Jovan Karofsky sort of having carte blanche over everybody, that Ziggy Schmidt and Dominic Kinnear are well within their rights to be in that room and demanding certain things of his general manager and the technical director. So at least in my mind, and I think in a lot of people's minds around the front office, that Ziggy and Dom are there and they're making orders and they're the ones who are going to be making some final decisions on things. And I do not, and I know for a fact that was not always the case with Cardinalfo. So, you know, you look at that and how even that dynamic has changed. And I think that's a positive for the LA Galaxy. You have two experienced guys who I believe know how to put teams together. Doing that over maybe Pete Vianis and Jovan Karofsky. So just to sort of take a look at that and how that dynamic has changed, I think it's interesting. You know, I don't think we've heard all the ramifications from sort of the Phil Anschutz meeting with all of the with the front office there in terms of Chris Klein and anybody else who I believe was there, Jovan Karofsky and possibly Pete Vianis as well. I think Kevin reported on that. So I don't think we've heard the full ramifications or at least the adjustments and plans of things that are going on behind the scenes. I know there's lots of people calling from front office changes, and I would not count those out yet, at least. Let's see how this offseason goes as the Galaxy end this season. Maybe that happens right at the end of the season and everything starts to change. But for right now, everything sort of stands pat with the added benefit of having Dominic Kinnear and Siggy Schmidt have their full force and impact being felt on the front office. At least that's my my opinion on those things and sort of what we've heard. Let's go to Derek in OC.
Hey, Josh. This is Derek calling in from Orange County. First-time caller. I enjoy the show. I was just listening to your Thursday show on my way home from work and just had some thoughts. I think Gio and Jonah and the DP situation, I agree, isn't the best. It probably wasn't the right move to lock us into those situations. But I think Jonah's a skilled player. I think he has talent. I look at Gio. He's not a guy, really, that you can rely on every week, which you would want with a DP. But overall, I think, you know, he has skill. He has talent. You just need some guys around him. You know, yes, you should be able to rely on him as a DP. That's not the best. But I don't necessarily think that he's a detriment to the team. But I look at the other guys. I remember being at the home game against Seattle early in the season with all our young guys out there, and it's not their fault, but just watching those guys against the Sounders, it was like watching an amateur team just against professionals. It was just not even close. I just look at our team as a whole. There's some good players out there. There's some players that I think have skill, but overall, there's just no cohesiveness this season, no playing style. I just look at the front office and the coaching, and I don't have the answers. I'd like to hear your thoughts or Wendy's thoughts, but, you know, are there not other players in lower divisions in Europe that we could bring over that are good enough for MLS, that are willing to, you know, get paid what we can pay? Or other MLS teams have players that are not DPs that are decent. Teams play well. You know, why in MLS don't teams trade in between the league more often? Probably some financial things, but yeah, just my thoughts. I just think the DPs aren't our biggest problem. I think that we have lots of problems, obviously, and just as a team collectively, the defense is a mess, the offense is a mess. So here we guys think. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Derek. Appreciate the call. A lot of things to sort of touch and cover there. Let's see if I can go down the list. Here's my big thing with Giovanni Dos Santos and you saying he's not a detriment to the team. If you're at your workplace, or if anybody's listening is at your workplace, and you have a guy on the team who makes the most money, everybody knows that he's the guy who's the big shot who comes in, and he's the guy who's not performing, and he's the guy who is not necessarily being, you know, a great teammate. He's blaming the other people, which is what we heard Giovanni Dos Santos say in the game before. And you see him constantly underperform, but yet he's making the most money. And, you know, the boss keeps giving him all the big assignments because he's the guy. And so after a while, that wears on team chemistry, in my opinion. I mean, what do you say if you're any of the other strikers on this team that you say, okay, so I see Giassi Zardes and Giovanni Dos Santos get 90 minutes kind of regardless of how they play. So I guess it doesn't really matter how I play. So, you know, you saying there's no detriment to the team, that's the detriment to the team. I don't think he's a great locker room guy. The fact that he's wearing the armband right now, the captain's armband, I mean, sure. Why not? I think I said it on the Thursday night show that, in my opinion, that's a mistake. I think there are other players on the team who are way more qualified to wear that armband. You could give it to Roman Alessandrini. You could give it to Ashley Cole. I would give it to, you know, a guy even like Rafa Garcia sometimes over Giovanni Dos Santos in these cases. But I think Kevin was right earlier in the show saying that, you know, Siggy's putting some subtle messages out here. He's trying to see guys. So if he's giving Giovanni Dos Santos the position up top and he's giving Giovanni Dos Santos the armband, he's saying, listen, you're a leader. You're a team guy. You need to perform. We need you to perform. And we're going to do our best to get you the ball. And that was one of Siggy's criticisms. Afterwards, he says that a lot of times he thinks that players don't do a great job of finding Giovanni Dos Santos in the dangerous positions. Okay. So, you know, however Siggy sees it, that's fine. But when you look at all these and the designated player situation and how those aren't a detriment, the fact is the Galaxy cannot outspend or outspend people in order to fix the problem they have. And you were right. There's a lack of talent on the LA Galaxy. But a lot of that has to come from their designated players, which is Giovanni Dos Santos, who you're expecting to score realistically. His goals totals in 2016, you know what, 14 goals in I think in the league, 15, 16 goals overall. That's what you need from him every single year if he's going to be the highest paid player and the designated player who's sort of the face of the franchise. And the fact that you're not getting that from only 3 goals from the run of play, that is a problem. So your DPs hinder your team so much. If you get DPs wrong, and we've seen it throughout the league, if you get your DP wrong, you're going to struggle. And so now you got Jonah in there, which I think Jonah will be fine. I have no problems with Jonathan Dos Santos. The problem is that he's linked with Giovanni Dos Santos. So having those two there is a block of money, $7 million worth of $7 million plus 7.5, 7.7, somewhere in there, of payroll that you're not getting production out of, and that's the problem. All right, that's the big issue for me, is that, you know, overall you're underperforming and you have that $7.7 million that is a block together. So it doesn't matter whether Jonah is really good. If Giovanni Dos Santos is really bad, then you're still not getting it out of the block because they're linked. You can't get rid of one without the other. And God, I'd love to be proven wrong. So that's what that's where the big problem is. And going to get European players, sure, you could get some lower-level European players. I think a lot of people would argue you could go to South America or even Mexico and possibly find some players who are a lot better and who are cheaper and not as inflated price-wise in terms of European players. But here's the thing I'd ask you, Derek, is you look at what the front office has made in terms of some of the decisions they've made for those European players and look who they've signed. If you're not a big fan of Joao Pedro and you think that that's not providing a payback on the over $1 million that they paid on the transfer fee for him, if you're not a big fan of Michael Ciani, if you're not a big fan of Pele Van Aanholt, these are the guys they went over to get and who they found. Although, you know, you also have to give them some credit. They found a guy like Jelle Van Damme who had a great season in 2016. So, I mean, that was a positive thing there. So, you know, do you trust the front office? You say there's a lack of talent and you want to put the blame on the younger players, but the younger players shouldn't have been forced into a situation where they were starting so many games at the beginning of the year. And that's the big issue that I have. If it's one or two guys in this, then hey, maybe that makes sense. But the way the team was constructed was there was no depth. The depth they had was untested. There were always bodies in places. And certainly the amount of injuries has been astronomical, but at the same time, the front office put this team together. Do you trust them to go out and find these European players that you want, and are they going to pick the right guys? I think the track record so far with them is very hit and miss. Alessandrini's a hit. Good job. That's a home run. He's been a great player. So, you know, can you keep him is sort of the thing. Can you keep Ramon Alessandrini? Can you keep Giovanni Dos Santos? Can you keep Jonathan Dos Santos? Can you keep all those guys and be successful? You're going to have to sign some big name or at least big dollar-wise targeted allocation money players in 2018 for the season and to provide the depth and to provide that talent. Landon Donovan said you have to build up the spine. Right now the LA Galaxy spine is rather spineless. Actually, so you have to get better in those key areas. In central midfield, maybe you have to find a replacement for Joao Pedro, because if he's going to be the starter and you spent so much money on him, that's tough. I agreed a lot with what Landon Donovan said. I thought he pulled no punches and added a bunch of really good insight into his former team, and that's what you want. Quite honestly, the most relaxed and most free-flowing and energetic I've heard Landon Donovan in a very long time, and I would gladly listen to that man commentate on soccer any day of the week. All right, let's go to another call. Hector in Riverside.
Hey guys, it's Hector from Riverside. I just have a quick comment. It's time to get rid of Siggy Schmidt. And like I said about 2 months ago, it's time to bring either a European or South American coach with a totally different mentality. Let's hope it happens. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, here's my thing, Hector. Okay, so you want to get rid of Siggy Schmidt, one of the all-time winningest MLS coaches. And you can say that he's MLS 1.0. Him and Dom Kinnear are both, you know, over their head in terms of, you know, the new tactics and the new ideas that are hitting here. But the bottom line is that very few European or South American coaches have come in and been really successful. Obviously, you're going to point to Tata Martino as one of the ones, and Patrick Vieira as one of the ones. And those are sort of the newer wave of guys. But just because you find somebody from Europe doesn't mean that all of a sudden the Galaxy's problems are solved. And I think if anything we've learned this year is that it wasn't about coaching. You know, it's a battle to lack of talent. It's about the team that was developed over the offseason in 2017 and how that continued to play and plague itself throughout this season. I mean, the fact that the LA Galaxy have not had a solid right back the entire year. The fact that the LA Galaxy traded away a solid right back they had. These are the things that have hit the LA Galaxy and made this year what it is. If you want to go back and blame the coaching, you want to blame Siggy Schmidt for starting Giassi Zardes at right back, I can understand why you would say that. Say, hey, you know, we're just throwing the towel. But your other option was Rafa Garcia. And in this game where Joao Pedro gets hurt, you would have had to move Rafa Garcia into that midfield position and move somebody else back into that right. They don't have the bodies. They don't have the depth. It is not as much a coaching issue as it is the plan that was put in place prior to the season. Kurt Anelfo is outperforming Siggy Schmidt right now in terms of playing and wins and first nine games and all that stuff. All right, so I think we've, put this into perspective. Everybody wants to give Siggy time, and he should be allowed it because they've realized this team is horrible. But at the same time, go back and look at the beginning of the season, and this was the same team actually almost in worse shape with the amount of injuries they had. And that was all sort of the result of a shallow talent pool for the LA Galaxy, in my opinion. So sure, go out and get another coach. It's not going to solve your problems right now. And I don't think if you're the LA Galaxy, you want to go through a second coach in a year where you would then be looking for your third coach in a calendar 12 months. All right, that's not where you want to go. You need somebody to be in there to implement a plan. Landon Donovan said it was like the LA Galaxy were built without a plan in 2017. I couldn't agree more. All right, I couldn't agree more. All right, thanks for those calls. That's very good. I'm going to go through and get some listener questions before I get to this Houston game as well. So some more tweets and emails that you've sent us. This one from @RoyalFootballer. Paul says, how do you think other players on the team view Giovanni Dos Santos, especially after his comments on the lack of service and him being named captain? Yeah, I think it's tough. I think I sort of hinted on that a little bit in my comments about Giovanni Dos Santos earlier. I think it's very tough for the rest of the team to sort of look at Gio and say, yeah, this is the guy I want on my team right now. I think it's hard for a multitude of reasons. The fact that the LA Galaxy are so horrible right now makes it a not enjoyable place to work kind of regardless. I mean, these guys are having to go in and really show that they're professionals this year. They're having to go in and do the work and put in the time, knowing that, their playoff hopes are done and that they're part of one of the worst LA Galaxy teams. That can't be fun. It can't be fun to work out in the gym whenever you know that, the next game you're probably going to lose. And it's been that way for a while. All right, 17 losses on the year. And like I said, I could easily see that being 20 losses total on this year as the Galaxy wrap up the rest of their last four games. So, so it's not a happy place to begin with. And then you have guys who seemingly are not performing and continue to get starts. All right, you got guys like Giovanni Dos Santos, 3 goals from the run of play. You got Giassi Zardes, only 2 goals in the season. So that's tough. That's a tough thing to be put in. So I don't imagine that he's viewed very likable right now, but I don't know that anybody in any position would. Although, if you give the armband to Roman Alessandrini, I don't think there's a player on there that doesn't respect the amount of effort that man has put in this year. So, I mean, there's other options here. But again, Kevin was on to something, and I hadn't quite looked at it that way, but you really have to look at what messages Siggy Schmidt's trying to send right now. And some of it's not going to make sense. Some of it you're going to get angry at. All right, the whole John Kempen thing to me just baffles the mind why you don't start the man in his hometown in front of his friends. That gives the kid a boost. If you want to start D-Up, start him against Houston. All right, you have 4 other games that you could have started D-Up at the end of the year. So why? Is there a message in there? I don't know. It's interesting. All right, but those are the sort of things that, it's the other point of view that you have to take a look at sometimes. Let's go to another question. David writes in and says, if you are AEG, what changes do you make this offseason? Academy prospects not contributing, pieces on the team don't fit, and Ziggy's not getting through. I think it's a little early to say that Ziggy's not getting through. I think Ziggy's getting ready to offload and cut and move pieces that he sees as not part of his plan moving forward. I think that's what's going on right now. All right, ultimately, the losses at this point really don't matter. I know it matters to the fans, and I know it matters to those that are watching. You want to feel a little bit better about your team, but ultimately, this is about 2018, and it has been, as Kevin said, for the last month. It's been about 2018. So how does this team change in 2018? And if you're AEG, what changes do you make this offseason? You look at the front office and whether that's guys being let go, guys being moved to different positions, getting more experienced team builders in there, even if that means going out and getting a high-priced general manager, of which I don't know most of the general managers' names in Major League Soccer, because a lot of them are either GM coaches or a lot of them are way behind-the-scenes guys. You don't hear a lot about it. So you're going to have to go steal somebody from somebody else, basically. You have to get somebody who knows how to put together a team and who knows the ins and outs of Major League Soccer. It's why getting an international coach can be different. It's about the ins and outs of soccer. All right, but you're going to have to grab somebody if that's the case. If Siggy isn't going to be that dual role guy, if Siggy isn't going to move up into the general manager guy, then that's what you have to do. You have to go out and find somebody who can put a team together with the mind of having a plan on how the LA Galaxy want to play and what players they need to make that plan happen and how they can make that all happen under the salary cap and with targeted allocation money that they will certainly have in 2018. That's what you need to see in the offseason, so in my opinion. And Academy prospects, listen, one of our callers said it on the Thursday show that you shouldn't expect that the LA Galaxy are going to have 7 or 8 Academy players and through LA Galaxy 2 players that are going to be successful on the senior team. It doesn't happen. Not going to happen. And that's not a fail of the Academy system. The Academy system's looking for one guy who makes a significant impact on the team, maybe 2 or 3 guys who make an impact on the team, a positive impact. That's it. That's probably once every 2, 3, 4 years that you're looking for those guys. One guy a year is what one of our callers said on the Thursday night. One guy a year is what you're looking for. All right, let's see. Another question we got at the Curse of Chris, who has a nice little Lego spaceman as his avatar, which I really enjoy, Chris, so thumbs up on that. If the Galaxy could go back and undo 1 or 2 things that make this season better, what do you think they'd do? What do you think they'd do if they could change 1 or 2 things? Let's go for 1, you wouldn't trade AJ De La Garza. And the reason you wouldn't do that is because then you would actually have a solid right back for the entire year and a guy who can fit into the center back position. And maybe that helps your back line be a little bit less worse than it has been. And you almost can't even blame the back line because it's been just one guy after another of injuries and rotations and guys playing together that they don't know. 58 goals conceded on the year so far. Only 2008, 62 goals is worse right now, and that means the Galaxy basically can't give up more than 3 goals if they're going to tie, or more than 4 goals if they're going to set a new record here. So, or at least tie the old record and then possibly set it. I mean, what we've seen from the LA Galaxy is that they're in danger of definitely giving up more goals than that 62 that was done in 2008. So I think you go back and trade AJ De La Garza. I think that you go and you do not sign Jonathan Dos Santos is my other thing that I would change. Those two things. If you do, I would rather the LA Galaxy, having seen how locked in they are, I would rather the LA Galaxy not have signed a designated player in this summer transfer window than what they did with Jonathan Dos Santos. And it's not because Jonathan Dos Santos is a bad player. He's a good player. But what it has done in terms of the flexibility of the team. All right, and I hope I'm proven wrong. Let's see. Thomas writes in and he says, what are the odds of the Mexican national team telling the Dos Santos brothers to find a new team if they want considerations for the World Cup? I mean, crazier things have happened. They'd certainly be helping the LA Galaxy out if that happened. But yeah, I wouldn't hang my hat on that. I wouldn't get ready for that. But I think that if the LA Galaxy continue to be bad and the Dos Santos brothers continue to be bad, that there will be pressure on them to move teams, to find another place. And, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to blame the LA Galaxy or something else. But Giovanni Dos Santos, you know, maybe not the guy the Mexican national team is worried about the most. For them, I think it's probably Jonathan Dos Santos, who was, you know, a key sort of acquisition in the Confederations Cup. So in my mind, I think that would be an unlikely scenario. But at the same time, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. If they continue to be bad, then the LA Galaxy, or excuse me, then the Dos Santos brothers might feel that pressure to move to another place. So, you know, maybe that does clear up some time and space for the LA Galaxy. Let's see. Ernest writes in at Box Lobster. He says, if by some miracle we do offload the Dos Santos brothers, what message does that send to potential future players? I think it sends 2 messages. One is that the current administration didn't know what they were doing. And 2, that the LA Galaxy won't tolerate underperformers in the designated player spots. The first one of those is obviously detrimental to the organization and doesn't help them get future players. And 2, I would say that that might actually help, because I think all players sort of live on this hierarchy of if you perform well, you do well, then you get to keep playing. And if you don't perform well and you don't do well, then you shouldn't be playing. And if that hierarchy fails, then I think you have more problems in the locker room than anything else. So those are sort of my comments on that particular one. Just real quick, I'm trying to see if I can find any. We have an email from Richard, and Richard writes in. He says, "Hooray, we lose by only one goal. Zardes at right back? Yikes. Not too bad, although when he intercepts the ball near the box, he must learn how to keep the ball. Pedro and Bradford Jameson out with injury." By the way, Bradford Jameson looks like just dehydration, actually got sick on the field there, so I think he was just worn out. It was warm in Sporting. He had put in a tremendous amount of effort. He runs a lot. He tries real hard. All those things sort of come out. So BJ, I think, is going to be fine, but he just needs some time to recover there. I'll continue with Richard's email. He goes, "Soccer gods are conspiring. Too bad Gio onside goal was called offside." He said, "The highlights did not show the play. Why not?" And my answer to that is that MLS highlights are generally the worst thing ever in the history of highlights. Sometimes there are not. I've gone on this rant before. You can't just have 4 minutes of highlights. Sometimes there's not enough for 4 minutes of highlights. Sometimes there's too many highlights to just be put in 4 minutes. To say these are 2 minute highlights and these are 4 minute highlights just sort of completely ruins things. And when you don't show a foul that leads to a red card, or you don't show the foul that leads to a penalty kick, you might as well not show the highlights at all. So that's basically Richard talking about Kansas City. Rich, thanks for writing in. And then we got two other emails. Let's see if I can get through these. Daniel writes in. He says, LD comments. He says, "Hey, Josh, saw that Landon Donovan was being really critical of the Galaxy, saying he doesn't see the plan Siggy and Dom have for the club. I disagree completely. We have 29 players. If, as expected, Ashley Cole and Robbie Rogers will be gone, 27, that we have to decide who fits with the few core players, whom I hope to be Legette, Alessandrini, Boateng, Zardes, Kempen, Rowe, Steris, Romney, Husidic, Garcia, and Pedro, that they don't want to get rid of. I think we saw with Anolfo a number of times Pedro, who LD was most critical of, do really well, but he doesn't play well with Jones, and I'm not really sure he plays well with Jonathan Dos Santos. But when he gets to play with someone who has a similar style like Husidic and Garcia, he plays well and will be successful in this league. Also, I'd love to see Jaime and Jose Villarreal, as well as Ariel Lassiter, get more playing time and looks from Siggy and Dom to see who fits best together." Listen, I don't think Landon Donovan was critical of Siggy Schmidt and Dominic Kinnear. I think he's critical of the 2017 LA Galaxy in the way that they were constructed without a plan. I didn't disagree with anything that Landon said. Listen, if Joao Pedro is going to be that finicky about who he gets paired with, then he's not worth the million or million and a half dollars they paid in the transfer fee. It's that simple. All right, and maybe they got him and he doesn't fit, and that's not his problem either. Maybe he's another puzzle piece to this 2017 LA Galaxy that doesn't work. All right, so, I mean, I agree with Landon. I don't see the plan. All right, certainly the plan was to bring in some talented players and then backfill the rest with the academy guys, and nobody's ever done that before, and it's fallen completely flat on its face. Nobody's had success with a bunch of academy / LA Galaxy 2 / USL / whatever your development academy is. Nobody's had success yet with those. SC Dallas is probably the closest. Now, you do have some individual successful guys. All right, and that's good. You have New York Red Bulls, who had a really good LA Galaxy or a really good USL team, that they've promoted a couple guys to the senior team who have had success. I believe Tyler Derrick is one. I'm probably getting the name wrong, and everybody's going to say, that guy plays on this. I'm generally horrible with the rest of Major League Soccer, except for the LA Galaxy. All right, I have time for one track focus, which is the LA Galaxy. But I mean, they've had success with one-offs here and there. Even the LA Galaxy with Jossy Zardes had success with homegrown players. It's one or two guys. You can't promote 7-8 guys and then expect that to be the backbone of your team, and that's what the 2017 LA Galaxy did. And the guys they did invest in heavily with talent and with money either haven't performed or were injured or didn't fit the general plan the LA Galaxy had. Kevin has said it many times on this show that a former person associated with the LA Galaxy said that this team was was one of the worst constructed teams he had ever seen. And one of, I believe in the direct quote, is one of the lamest LA Galaxy teams to ever wear the kit. All right, that's somebody who holds a tremendous amount of weight, at least in my mind, saying that. So that's what you're getting here. All right, so Landon wasn't being overly critical. I don't know that you could be overly critical of this LA Galaxy team. They have a very, very good chance of finishing last in Major League Soccer this year. Very, very good. All right, Colorado has an easier schedule than the Galaxy do. I see the Galaxy losing three of their next four games. All right, I had hopes at one time of beating Real Salt Lake coming up this weekend, but with the way that they're playing and sort of their resurgence, I don't see that happening. I mean, a draw would be a great result there. So maybe the Galaxy can scrape out one of those, but that's it. You can't be overly critical of this, and Landon Donovan, Daniel, was absolutely 100% accurate in everything that he said. Even with Joao Pedro, who I like, who I think could have developed, the point that Landon makes is that for the money they spent, he needed to have an immediate impact, and he hasn't. All right, long-term, low-cost, you can say whatever you want, but $1 million is $1 million. And in Major League Soccer, you can't waste a single dollar in terms of what you're getting. If you're going to spend $1 million, you better get somebody who's able to impact the team immediately. And Joao Pedro, a young kid, has not been able to do that yet. All right, maybe he doesn't fit with the other two guys, but those are the other two guys that he's playing with. So it'll be interesting to see. All right, last email that we have, and then I'll get on to a Houston preview for you. Juan writes in, he says, "Hey Josh, Juan here from San Fernando Valley. With Alessandrini being the brightest offensive weapon this season, without him, it would have been a far worse 2017 season than it already is, dead last with a far worse winning tying record. What are the chances of the front office keeping him for 2018? If the increase in TAM doesn't guarantee him staying, if they're able to pursue a designated player striker." So listen, I don't think the LA Galaxy are going to get rid of Roman Alessandrini. I've had a lot of people say, oh, they can't get rid of Roman. And you're right, you can't, because he's been the best player on the offensive side of the ball, in my opinion. Actually, it's not even the fact. He's been the best offensive player for the LA Galaxy this season. They should not have to get rid of him. The only reason we even discuss getting rid of him is because the LA Galaxy need a striker who's able to impact this team, and they need a high-dollar striker, and the easiest way to do that is to move a designated player that you have currently, Jonathan Dos Santos, Giovanni Dos Santos, or Roman Alessandrini. And if you have two guys who are tied together, like I've talked about earlier, the $7.5 million block that basically comes from Jonathan Dos Santos and Gio Dos Santos, when you have two of those guys together, then you can't moving them is harder because you have to move them together than it is to move one. And Roman Alessandrini is the easiest person to move. Plus, he had a good year. So you could see him move either to another team in Major League Soccer, which would really tick a whole bunch of Galaxy fans off, or you could see him moving somewhere else. And the LA Galaxy may actually be able to get a profit off of him as well. There is some place that Roman Alessandrini can live in 2018. That being said, I don't think the LA Galaxy are going to get rid of him. All right, so that's sort of it. You know, another question that Juan asks is, do you see a fourth designated player coming into the league? I think that eventually, maybe, in the next 5 years, that could happen. But I think right now the owners are really liking this targeted allocation money. They like going for, you know, the under $1 million guys. And we'll see if the ceiling actually adjusts up for the targeted allocation money, of which there could be an additional $2 million coming in 2018. If you have $2 million... you're probably going to want to go out and spend that money, and it's hard to spend it if the cap is $1 million. So if they raise the ceiling of targeted allocation money to, say, $2 million, now you're in business. Now you could get a guy like Roman Alessandrini down into the targeted allocation money zone and still go out and buy somebody for $7, $8, $9 million, which is what the Galaxy should do in terms of a striker. So that's it. Juan also talks about Gignac would have been a great signing. Sadly, the transfer fee was way too high for the Galaxy. I don't think the transfer fee stopped that from happening. I'll be honest with you. It would have been a smarter move to pay whatever the transfer fee they were asking, which I believe would have been in the $7 or $8 million range. It would have been a smarter play to do that than what they did. So for me, I don't know that the transfer fee stopped it. All right, so I appreciate that, Juan. Thanks for writing in. Remember, you can always write in to Corner of the Galaxy at cornerofthegalaxy@gmail.com. That's where the email address is. If you go to our Contact Us page, there's an email form you can just fill out on our website at cornerofthegalaxy.com. That works as well. All right, let's get you ready for the Houston Dynamo, another midweek game. The LA Galaxy have gone Wednesday now. In terms of their road trip here. So Wednesday in Houston, Wednesday, September 27th, 2017, a 5:30 p.m. Pacific time kickoff for the LA Galaxy. This is at BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston. Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes is where you can find this game. Houston is coming off of a 1-1 draw with New York City FC. That game was played up in Connecticut, if you followed that wonderful saga. That was always fun in terms of what was happening with New York City City not being able to play because of the New York Yankees taking up their stadium at Yankee Stadium there. But yeah, so a 1-1 draw. Houston is 10-10-9 for 39 points and currently 7th in the Western Conference, really trying to claw their way back into the playoff race here. Their home record is 9-1-3. They just lost to Colorado on September 9th. That was their first home loss. They've generally been lights out at home and absolutely atrocious on the road. Kind of maybe the opposite of the LA Galaxy, although they haven't been that great on the road either. Houston has 39 points. 30 of those points came at home, which is sort of an interesting take on that, and you can understand that only 9 points have come on the road this year. Their one goal was scored on a very quick restart after a foul at the top of the box. In fact, New York City fans still complaining the ball didn't come to complete stop. It was close enough for me. I would let that play, and it was a good goal. It was great to catch New York City off guard there, and it also caught the cameraman operators off guard as well. So that was interesting. If you listen, Houston is a good team. They played very well in the second half of this New York City game, even though both of the goals were scored early in the first half. But it's interesting to sort of see where this Houston team has gone. In the last 9 games, basically, they're 2-3-4. Okay, so only 2 wins in their last 9 games, the rest losses and draws. And they're winless in their last 5 games, 0-3-2. So you may be catching, if you're the LA Galaxy, you may be catching the Houston Dynamo at the right time. But it's going to be a difficult, very difficult batter. I didn't look at the weather outlook, but if Kansas City was that warm, I'm hoping that Houston won't be that warm as well. A night game at least helps that out a little bit. Again, Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes is where you can find that game on the night. The LA Galaxy will get Jermaine Jones back from his 1-game suspension, which is good because Joao Pedro's out with the hamstring. It looks like Bradley Diallo's still out with the hamstring. You're going to have perhaps the same situation the LA Galaxy faced against Sporting Kansas City, unless Diallo can make a miraculous recovery. AJ De La Garza very well could play at that right back position again. Other than that, you would have to move Rafa Garcia there. That is going to be your other option right now, and it's simply a matter of bodies. So you can complain and get angry about it all you want, but in terms of bodies, you're going to have to play one of those guys at that right back role, and understand that Jermaine Jones is going to be paired with Jonathan Dos Santos there in the middle, or at least that's what it looks like right now. LA Galaxy have to get a win. They have to get four wins, basically. In order for them to finish above their all-time worst points per game, which was 1.10 in 2008, that is the current record for the worst LA Galaxy team ever, is 2008. I go by points per game. That gives you an idea, because with all the different seasons of 30 games and 36 games and 28 games and 30 games and 32 games and 34 games, all the different seasons that have sort of gone, you can always go by a points per game. And so for the most part, even though some of those get skewed by the MLS shootout era, for the most part, 2008 was the worst LA Galaxy team. And somebody said that if the 2008 LA Galaxy played the 2017 LA Galaxy, that the 2008 Galaxy would kill the 2017 LA Galaxy. And I think if you've looked at everything that has sort of gone on with the LA Galaxy this year, that probably isn't a very long stretch. So again, this game coming up, LA Galaxy just looking for anything right now. Look, grasping at straws. I mean, the 2-1 defeat wasn't horrible in Sporting Kansas City. The fact that it was 2-0 going into halftime and that Sporting really just ran over the LA Galaxy whenever they wanted to in the first half was obviously another warning sign. The fact the Galaxy were able to sort of claw back and at least make the game close, I don't think they ever really threatened. I never felt like the Galaxy were getting really close to being dangerous in this game. But Roman Alessandrini's free kick goal, the second free kick goal by the LA Galaxy this year, was obviously well timed. But if it wasn't for that, it's a 2-0 game, and you really don't see the LA Galaxy much in that. So it's great they got the goal. It's great they didn't get shut out again. But at the same time, I don't know that you could take it as a great moral victory. And going into Houston, you hope that any momentum the game did in the second half is going to play out here in Houston on Wednesday night. And then the LA Galaxy, of course, will be headed back home. Only 2 home games remaining. Saturday, September 30th against Real Salt Lake at 7:30 p.m. That is going to be the last Saturday game of the 2017 season. And then on Sunday, October 15th, they will host Minnesota United after a 2-week international break. So Saturday's game against Real Salt Lake is going to be the last game basically for 2 weeks. And then it'll be Minnesota United at home. That's the best chance the LA Galaxy have of winning another game this season. And then it will be travel to FC Dallas, who is in an absolute tailspin, complete collapse. People are talking about Oscar Pereja may have actually his job in danger
But FC Dallas has just totally tanked. And if you're one of these people who says that FC Dallas does it right, all those young kids, the academy kids and all things, then this collapse does not help your argument. All right, it is not helping you out right now. So FC Dallas away on October 22nd, the last game of the 2017 season for the LA Galaxy. Wouldn't it be fun if the LA Galaxy won against Houston and won against Real Salt Lake and won against Minnesota and then went into this, you know, having some small inkling of chance? It's not going to happen in the playoffs. I was trying to get amped up or excited for a single second, and it wasn't going to happen. So no problems with that. All right, that does it again. A little bit shorter show than we normally have on Mondays, but Kevin off checking or at least covering the Dodgers. You know, it was a little loud with Kevin, so I apologize if any of that was too unintelligible, but we're trying our best to make sure that we give you a Monday night show every Monday night and that you guys have all the coverage that you need leading up to these games, and especially with a midweek game, wanted to get the Houston preview in there as well. All right, if you're looking for Mr. Kevin Baxter, you can find him at kbaxter11 on Twitter. If you're looking for him at latimes.com, go do that. Follow him, support him. He does a great job, writes a ton about the LA Galaxy for a paper that used to not care about the team. So please support him any chance that you get. If you're looking for me on Twitter, at jguessman, jguessman, and at Galaxy Podcast on Twitter, cornerofthegalaxy.com. Head on over to, actually, it's really easy. In this podcast, if you just go to the podcast notes, I will put a link for our COG t-shirts. Only about 5 days left. 5 days left for you to order your Corner of the Galaxy t-shirt, your logo t-shirt. You guys have been amazing with the support. Honestly, I never would have thought we would have sold this many t-shirts ever in a million years. I think we're up to like 43 so far, which is ridiculous. Absolutely amazing. So thank you for that. But please, if you haven't ordered yours already, don't be left out. This is the first ever limited edition run of the Corner of the Galaxy logo t-shirts. And after a horrible year that the LA Galaxy have, at least I can bring you something good here towards the end. All right, so we appreciate you helping us out. Go to the podcast notes and you can find that, or on our webpage for any of the podcasts, you can find them there. All right, for Mr. Kevin Baxter, I'm Josh Guessman. You've been listening to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on a September 25th. Everyone have a great one.
You've been listening to the Corner of the Galaxy from the Box podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Galaxy Podcast. And be sure to check out and subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook by searching for Corner of the Galaxy. And for all of your independent LA Galaxy news, discussion, and entertainment, including this podcast, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Fans, thanks for listening. We ask that you be kind and courteous to your neighbors as you leave the podcast. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you again. Until then, I'm Michael Araujo, and on behalf of the entire Corner of the Galaxy crew, goodbye, everybody.